And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best?
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John, you're right.
Right. I'm just going to play us in a little bit.
When are you going to tell me we're starting?
We started.
Okay. Awesome.
I was thinking I enjoy when I was listening to your podcast about how you were saying you don't often tell people when you've started because it makes them nervous or change or whatever else. And I was thinking that's such a, like, I remember having those feelings, like, very early on in my career, like when I would go to do a radio show or something like that, right? To promote whatever show I was on. The minute, like, it was like on air or whatever else, all of a sudden I'm like sitting up super straight and like speaking in this different voice and like whatever else. And it was like, what is happening? like, what is that?
All right. We're good? Yeah, we're good. Beautiful. All right. So, parking lot. You're in the parking lot. You're devastated.
Oh, yeah, I don't remember where I was going with that.
End of theater. You're living with your parents. You're devastated. You're crying.
We're talking about change. I know, like, in my brain, I'm, like, trying to remember where we were talking. But, like, digging the heels. There we go. I'm like, where were we?
That's us.
Digging the heels, change. Yeah, I was having that moment of like not really knowing who I was, right? Like, because like I identified so much. So, like in the parking lot, sobbing to my husband, and he was like, "Why is it so bad to like change and to be this, you know, be something else now?" And I was like, "Because this is what you're supposed to be." And, like, but having those crucial moments, it's like almost like those moments of failure, which aren't really failure, right? Are where you grow and like build your best self, I think, right?
Right.
Like, I saw this great meme the other day, and it was like, it was an image of a box, and it said failure on the front of the box. And it's like what you don't see. And then you see another thing, it says failure, but you can see the cube. It's a cube.
Okay.
And on the side, it was like lessons, you know, journey, all this stuff. And I was like, oh, that's so true. Like, that's such a great, I was like, I need to have that somewhere. because you always see, like, in my brain, I say you, but like I always saw failures as being this very negative thing, right? Like
right.
You failed, right?
Right.
You passed or you failed. School, you passed or you failed. Failed is not good.
Right.
But I think about all of the greatest things in my life have not come from when I was immediately successful, right? They've come from when I've fallen flat on my face, embarrassed, red, heart racing, all of these things, and had to get back up and do something about it.
What do you think your biggest failure is?
Oh, my biggest failure? That's hard. See, so I would say probably it's also my biggest success, right? So My biggest failure would be my husband and I went through a really, like, a rough patch in our relationship. And it was because we weren't communicating. We both saw ourselves having this different relationship and, like, we weren't connecting.
Okay.
We went through this really rough patch, and now we have the relationship that we thought we had.
Right.
Right. And so that is the biggest success. Like, he is my best friend. He's
so that period was your biggest failure, but it spawned your biggest success.
Yeah, which is why I literally was like,
right. Is that really a failure? Yeah.
Is it really a failure? I mean, it was at the moment. I mean, it was one of the hardest things I've gone through since, like, and losing my parents, right?
Right.
So, like,
well, you guys have been together forever, right?
We've been together since 2007.
So forever.
Like, forever. He'll literally be like, "I don't know what my life looked like without you." I'm like, "You're welcome." You're welcome. Here we are. But yeah, so we've been together for a really long time and grown, right, together as different right. iterations. I mean, thinking about being an undergrad together and then like going, starting some sort of career.
That's
and then
why
going
marriage through. Is so hard because like no matter how well you know the person that you're marrying, mm-hmm. in 5 years, they're not going to be that.
Correct.
So.
And I had a friend once say what I thought was so great that like you always want to continue growing, right? Like you're like you want to continue growing. Do you grow together or do you grow separate?
Right.
Right. And that's kind of the thing. Like, and not together as in you're the same person, because that's not weird and you don't want that. Like,
right.
like
right.
you need someone to balance you. But do you grow and want that person to grow? I don't want to say the same, but like at the same rate, at the same level, at the same whatever it is that they want for themselves, right? Like you
right.
want what's best.
Right.
Yeah. So it's really interesting going from, you know, kids who have not a worry in the world. We think of some of the things that we did. We're like, oh my gosh, we had no idea. Like we had no idea.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We had no idea. We're going on vacations and doing the things and we have no money and we have no like whatever, you know,
right.
responsibilities really. And now having three kids, two dogs, you know, house, jobs, you know, serious responsibilities. Just such like just looking, being able to look back and be like, whoa, you know?
Yeah. But I was thinking if you knew what was coming, you wouldn't have done it.
Right.
So it's right. probably good that you're.
Oh, 100%. I mean, even thinking about the time that I was just speaking of, like the partnership that we have now that is so strong and so beautiful, even with its flaws and all the things
right.
we wouldn't have if we didn't go through what we went through.
Right.
Right. And like we wouldn't be the people that we are now. We
right.
wouldn't be the parents we are, the friends we are, the, you know. The kids we are, like all of the things
yeah.
to each other. It's so important to go what you go through what you go through, even though it sucks when you go through some yeah. of the stuff.
We went through a period like that too.
Yeah,
but it was because I was crazy. So, which is also a damper on a mm-hmm. relationship.
Yeah, I can imagine. So, I can imagine.
Yeah,
I
no, and but it's funny because we didn't like. I'm trying to make a parallel to your experience, but we kind of didn't get through that together. I kind of, mm-hmm. I mean, she didn't leave,
mm-hmm.
so that was fair.
Mm-hmm.
But like, that was kind of all on me to like figure out a way
mm-hmm.
to get back on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, then like, I guess her cancer was probably that period for us. Not mm-hmm. that we weren't getting along. It's just that for a year and a half, there was just one person.
It's survival. Literal
yeah.
survival.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it worked for me because my stock went way up.
Yeah.
way, way, yeah. way up.
Well, you had to be there.
I was a primary
yeah.
caregiver. So yeah. I'm like, okay, I was crazy a decade mm-hmm. ago. I give you that. But how do you like me now?
Because now I'm doing pretty well.
Right. So my stock went way. I don't recommend it as a way to heal a marriage.
You're like, but here I am.
But it does work.
Yeah, but you're like, but here I am.
Right. I don't recommend it, but yeah. here I am.
But so then you had said earlier, too, though, that doing this now is a full time and you weren't doing it and you wish you had done it. Like, what made this change to do this as a full time? And
So after I was crazy, I said, all right. You don't go in and out of crazy immediately. It's a gradual in, it's a gradual out. And as the plane's lifting again, I start talking about it. Because what we were just saying, if I had known that there was a stigma around it, I probably wouldn't have talked about it. Mm. But I'm still half crazy, so I'm a little bit fearless, so I start talking about it.
Mm.
So I start, and I'm on social media and I'm talking about like, hey man, this is my story, my daughter. And so I got asked to be on a radio show and get interviewed about it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was interviewed about it, I'm like, oh wait, this feels like flow. Like mm-hmm. I can. I'm really bad at some stuff, but this I can do.
Yeah.
And so when we were done, the station said, hey, do you want to have a show? And so I said, yeah. But I still had like a day job. I was mm-hmm. managing a website for as a day job.
Mm-hmm.
And then during the whole cancer thing,
mm-hmm.
like it became impossible to keep the day job.
Sure.
Which is the universe's way of telling you, I should have been able to figure that out without that, but mm-hmm. But I didn't. So I just kind of said, okay, I have to do this full time. And then also the impact, and I'm not trying to sound like an asshole, but like seeing that I'm actually making change happen now, mm-hmm. and before I was making money happen, but mm-hmm. now I'm actually making change, mm-hmm. is and it's also the truest thing to myself. Like, if I had it to do over again, I probably would have had a radio show right out of college and been a touring musician and done that. But I went corporate, which part of, I think, why I went crazy. Mm. But
it's a much different, harder lifestyle. And
yeah. Well, it's like what I was asking you about before. Suppressing creativity mm-hmm. is so toxic. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and if you suppress anything long enough, it's going to blow up. Mm-hmm. So, which is why you should be performing a little bit. Just a little bit.
I do, with all the children.
Right, right. Okay, that's right.
I am an entertainer in my own home. Da, da, da.
So then I said, okay, but I still want money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm going to have to figure out a way to do it professionally. So mm-hmm. I did. So
it's interesting. You were saying how, like, this is the universe being like, you know, here you go. I often talk about, and it was because of some author that I'm sure I can't remember the name, or a podcast or something I was listening to, and it was talking about, like, the whispers.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
There's the whispers where it's like they start first, and it's like, you know, hearing right. things. It's like, no, like, things starting to tell you, you need to make a shift, you need to make a change, you need to do whatever. And if you don't, then you're going to start getting slapped. And if you don't hit the slap, then you're going to get run over
yep.
until you make the change.
Yep.
And I've had a couple of moments where it has felt like that. Like, it started with whispers, it started with things, and then, like, all of a sudden it's like, nope, you need to take that.
When I asked you what your biggest failure was, I was trying to answer for myself.
Yeah.
And I think that was my biggest failure was, like, I knew 30 years ago. Mm. This isn't you. I was a theater major in college. Mm-hmm. And music. Mm-hmm. This isn't you. Mm-hmm. This isn't you. And I just didn't listen to it.
Mm.
And I gave 25 years of my life away to mm-hmm. stuff I shouldn't have been doing.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, too, like you were saying, like, you can see the impact. You can see the change. And I think that that's so important. And I think about, too, because you were saying I'm in the sweet spot with my kids and how old they are. I think a lot about them, and we're very transparent. My husband and I are very transparent with them, and, like, very open with them about everything.
That's the way to do it, man.
And, you know, my son, my oldest, has asked me, like, why do I do this? Why do I do the job I do? I mean, because also with nonprofit, like, I have to work on some weekends. I
yep.
have to do some night stuff. I have to go early mornings to things. I have to do some of these things. And I've literally said to him, because I know I'm making a difference. I can see the change that I'm doing in the community. I can literally see it. I can hear from the people who are impacted by the work that I do every day.
Which is so – how affirming is that? You don't get that in HR.
No.
Yeah.
No. No, although I say that and yet – really beautiful thing. So when my mother passed, she was not a traditional person. She didn't want the wake, the funeral, the thing. Like, she was like, no, I want, like, a party, and I want it to be like this, and I just want it to be the celebration of life. So I'm like, of course, I'm in charge of all the things. I'm like, here we go. So we had her celebration of life she was Irish, at an Irish bar.
Perfect.
And, yeah, it was amazing. They were fantastic. We were saying changing lives in HR. So we had a day where anybody could come, almost like a week. Like, anybody could come talk about, we had a box where they could write a memory of hers to put in the box so we would have it for our family, like all of these things. And there were so many people who came who my mother, like, fired, or like who she had really hard conversations with.
Mm.
And it was really wonderful because they came up to me to talk to me about those conversations.
Oh, wow.
And how she changed their lives
mm.
by something she said. And, like, I actually went and did a radio interview last year or 2 years ago. And it was somebody who my mother had fired. And so my last name is, the beginning of it is my maiden name, right? So
right. Like, how do you say that?
Dvorshna.
Okay, thank you. I purposely didn't try it though.
I'm like, it's going to be great.
No, I'm not.
That's why I kept it. I can't go like hyphenated Thomas. No, it's too easy. I have to make it hard for people. But so when people clearly see the last name, you're related to someone with that last name, right? Like, you have to be. So
you didn't pick it for yourself.
I didn't, but it's fun. And then I met this person who they, you know, heard my last name. They saw it on my name badge and they were like, how are you related to Marilyn? I was like, oh boy. It's like, it's my mother. It was like, what'd she do? How do we
what'd she do?
And this man literally said to me, I was like, oh man, she gave me the best advice of my life. She fired me. She was right to do so, but gave me the best advice of my life. And I always thought that was so fascinating because like you hear all these terrible stories about HR always, right? Like there's always these things. And getting to work with my mother, I watched her, like, people go into her office, into her space that were not doing well, like, for whatever reason, another personal, professional, whatever, and leave, open that door, a different person because of her. And, like, that's, like, I mean...
Doesn't that give you pause about therapy?
What do you mean?
So, your mother has this gift where... And I'm not talking... Your mother has this gift where you can walk in her office and an hour later leave with a big change, right? Therapy takes 6 months.
Yes, it can.
Right?
It can.
It does. I mean, nobody gets out of therapy in less than in 6 months.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of every time I've gone. I think it's probably been 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, because I have issues with therapeutic products. I failed at it my whole life. Maybe I'm just bad at it. But
maybe you haven't found the right therapist.
I've tried all the therapists.
I have a Rolodex. I have knocked them all off.
but maybe I haven't bumped into the right one. But I always just kind of think about the duration of it versus like because I've had life changing conversations too, and they're an hour. Why can't we just do that?
Because the people aren't as vulnerable. I also wonder that too. Like also the right connections, but. Also showing up vulnerably, although just speaking with you now for however long, I don't know if that's necessarily your problem, right? Like, I think that it's a pretty vulnerable, authentic kind of conversation. But I also think that depending upon if you don't have the right person that you're talking to, they're not the right person to help you, right?
Like,
and if you're not communicating, which I often go back to communication all the time, you're not communicating or understanding what the actual need, question, whatever is, you're not going to get the right outcome, right?
Yeah.
Like,
now that might be a problem for me. I had a relationship expert in here, communications expert.
What was their name so I can go back and listen? Send it to me later.
I will. Thank you. Trying to remember.
It's fine.
So she has this exercise you do. You should do this with your husband. It'll freak you out.
All right. Wait. I'm here. I'm writing it down. Go ahead.
So what you do is you say, like, say I want to talk to you. So I go, Melissa, I have something I want to talk to you about.
Yeah.
Is now a good time or can we make an appointment? That's the first thing you have to do.
Okay.
So if it's not a good time, for you, your job is to tell me that.
Oh. Okay.
Right? Right? Then you say, sure, John, go ahead. And I say, this show's going to take me 6 hours to produce because I got to make the phone sound like the microphone and that's going to throw off my whole day and I'm stressed about it.
Okay.
That's not true. It doesn't throw off my whole day.
Here we are.
So say back, and then, so I get to talk for like 2 minutes.
Okay.
Right? Then you have to say back to me what I said. Right.
Mm.
But then I go back to you with the stuff that you missed. The amount that you miss, and I communicate, so do you. We both communicate for a living. The amount that a professional communicator missed is so awful.
Oh, yeah.
And then we flip it. And then I say, okay, do you want to respond? And then you respond however you want to respond, if you want to respond. And then I have to say it back to you.
Oh, God.
But it's impossible because I'm still in my head thinking, the 6 hours, mother. You can't do it. The amount I missed was incredible. And I'm paying super attention because it's a show. You know?
Right.
It's just amazing to me.
Literally, my husband and I had a conversation like this on New Year's Eve. Life. We do New Year's Eve because we have the 7, 5, and 1 year old. Like,
right.
Ball drops at 5:30.
Yeah. Same here, and I don't have a 1 year old.
And so we got all the kids to bed. We did this with friends or whatever. We got the kids to bed, and then we just sat up and we're talking. And like, because again, like with my mother passing, I'm struggling, right? But like, I can't stop.
Right.
Right. So we were like kind of diving into that, and just because we haven't had a moment between the holidays and work and the things and whatever to just sit and talk to each other and like be. So like kids were asleep. It was calm. We were just sitting there and we were just talking about this. So he was saying something to me, and again, and I'm like listening, and I'm listening not to respond. I'm listening to understand, right? Which again, as a communicator, this is what you're trying to do. And I said something back to him and I like apologized, and I'm like, I really want to try harder and change doing whatever the thing was. And he looked at me and he was like, that's what you heard? And I was like, well, maybe.
Right.
Well, and he was like, that's not what I meant. And so then like, and we literally were doing that. And it was so fascinating because I was like, again, we were miscommunicating and I was really sitting there listening to understand.
Right.
Listening. And I was not doing it well. And I kept literally kept saying to him, I'm like, I need to learn to communicate better. And this is what I do.
Right.
Like,
right.
I communicate. Yeah. And yet, that exact exercise, like, I 100% know that, like, we're doing this sometimes, even though we're not noticing it. So, yeah.
I was just writing about this the other day. So, Trish was not raised in a communicative family at all.
Okay.
And she's a third grade teacher.
Mm-hmm.
She's brilliant at it.
Mm.
Like, clearly the best. And I'm not just saying it because it's her. Like, her whole school district says the same thing.
She's
born to do it.
Yeah.
Works all summer. Just works nights. Just born to do it. It's her thing. Mm. You put her in a third grade classroom, and she's flawless and funny and articulate and brilliant.
It's
and
her space.
Yeah, man. You put her in a house. It's not that necessarily that way.
Mm.
And for years, and first off, it took her like a decade to figure out she could say how she was feeling. Mm-hmm. And she still doesn't fully get that.
Mm-hmm.
But then to get that vocabulary going.
That's a huge struggle. And that's actually something even like we're working on with our kids. We're just having this conversation, it's very funny. My oldest was mad at my husband for something. And the last night, he doesn't like that when my husband raises his voice at him. Nobody likes it, but, you know, it's what happens when you don't listen again. And it was really funny because I walked into the bathroom to do something, and we were just laughing so hard about this last night. And I shut the door, and my son goes and gestures with his arm, pointing at my at my husband. And I'm like, what? And he goes, it's so annoying. And I'm like, I don't think that's the word you mean.
Right.
Talk about it, right?
Right.
And so, again, my husband was saying he's trying to find the word of how he's feeling. And I'm like, I struggle with that as an adult.
Yeah.
Like, I know I'm not using the right words. And it's so funny because, again, I'm trying to communicate. And it's like when I'm trying to speak with somebody, I get frustrated when I don't have the right word.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, I'm saying this word because I don't have anything
that's right.
a placeholder. But it's not exactly what I mean.
Right.
Right?
Which, A, is why music works. And, B, the trick that I've started to do with Trish, and it's kind of working, I stop listening to what you're saying. And I start listening to how you're saying it. And I'll probably get closer to the truth that way.
Well, see, that's really funny because when my husband and I have disagreements, he'll say to me, these were the words that I said. I'm like, but it's not the way you said it. And that's where I get
right.
like, it's so funny because I'll be like, that's not the tone. And he's like, but these are the words I'm saying. I'm like, but it doesn't matter what the words are you're saying
right,
if you're
right.
saying it to me this way. But that's so interesting. But that communication and words thing, it's actually so do you do resolutions or?
I'm so close to perfect.
I believe you.
No.
I believe you so much as I cross my fingers.
good, do. Yeah, but I live such a disciplined existence that like there's not a lot of room for change. Like I manage my day pretty regimented. So, and I'm afraid to do a lot different because I'm clear now.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't.
And this is working for you. So,
And it's working for me. So I'm like, I kind of don't want to toy around too much.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm sure there's a metric F ton of things that need to be fooled around
like,
with.
But this is working right now.
Yeah.
No, I get that. Yeah. Like, again, it's the change thing. Like,
and
no,
the consequence of it not working for me is probably different than the consequence of it not working for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, or maybe not, but probably. I mean, unless.
I think at the conversations we've had, it sounds like it would be different.
Yeah, right.
Just a little bit.
But, which is good for you. Yeah. We don't want that.
But it's interesting because it's, again, those the reason I asked was like finding the words. And so, like, one of the things. I used to do resolutions, right? Like, as most people. And then it was like, they're always like, brush your teeth twice a day, floss, do the things. Like, do the things I know would be good for me and I should just do them anyway.
Right.
And like most people, I would do well for a few months or whatever off, and then somehow it would slack off, and then right. I'd do the same exact thing the following year. So then, actually, when I started working at Artsmith Hudson, they do this event with the Mid-Hudson Japanese Community Association called Kakazome, which is the first writing of the year. So in Japanese culture, they do what's called kanji, and it's like this first writing of the year. And it's you sit there and you think about, like, what is your intention for the year? What is the thing that you need? And you come up and you write the character for it, the calligraphy, the right. Japanese calligraphy for it. And so we do it every year. It's actually this Saturday. I'm very excited about it. So since working there, I now pick a word every year. And it's like, it's been so great because it's really not about then the big changes. It's just like trying to keep that in the center focus. Mm. And again, with the reason I was saying this with the words is that I'm struggling. I've been struggling hard for my word for this year. My word for the previous years have just been so clear and easy, and like, this is 100% what I need this year. This is 100% what I need this year. You know, like 2 years ago, my word was create. I was in a really not good working environment. There was a lot of like toxic energy and culture and things like that. And I was like, so I needed to create a safer place for me to work. I literally was trying to create life. My husband and I were trying to have our third child. Mm. So like create that, and like creating space for myself. So like create was a perfect word.
Yeah.
Last year, my word was balance. 2024, my word was balance. Man, that word knocked me on my butt. Like, it still honestly could be my word probably for the rest of my life. It's hard.
Right.
So this year I literally was like, I've changed my word 3 times. Like, and I start thinking about it months before the new year because I'm like, all right, what have I done well this year? What really needs to be my word? And again, and it's like I started out with present. Because I struggle with, as you were saying, you wake up and you've got things coming at you yeah. constantly, right? I struggle with being present in the room because I'm like thinking about mm-hmm. my kids, I've got to do this. I got to buy them these things and do the things,
right.
get the things, and go to the teacher and do the things, and home life, groceries, whatever. And then there's like work and over here, and it's like, oh, I'm not being a good friend. I'm not contacting, you know. I struggle with being in the room.
Right.
So I was like, all right, presence, my word. And then I'm like, no, I felt like that was too, I don't want to say complacent, but stagnant. It didn't have enough energy for me. I'm a very energetic human being. And you can't tell. and so then my word was... engage, because then I'm like, it's still like I want to just engage in the space that I'm in.
Okay,
right? That felt better. Literally this morning before I came here, I like went into the kitchen. My husband, I'm like, I've got a different word now, and he's like, what is it now? I was like, intention. I was like, because it's like I want to be intentional, like where I am. I want to be intentional, deliberate where I am in the space, the contact that I'm having.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, literally as I'm driving here, I'm like, or maybe I do all three, and it's PI. I have an acronym for the year.
There you go.
Present. And it was so funny. He was like, why not? Like, just do the things.
I struggle with presence. Mm. Because I bet you're like this. I think not being present is the superpower.
Mm.
Because you – somebody like with your job, mm-hmm. you're – it's 18 fires a day mm-hmm. and 18 different projects a day. Mm-hmm. And if you're giving each one real estate that it wouldn't get if you were just focusing solely on it. You get an extra 10 minutes of my day because mm-hmm. I'm talking to John, but I'm really thinking about this.
Yeah.
So, but it gets an extra 10 minutes mm-hmm. a day. So I always wonder if not being present could be embraced.
Mm.
And I'm older than you, so I have found a trick though to presence.
Okay.
I notice I'm always like when I do the show, I'm very mm-hmm. present. I notice I'm always present when I'm doing stuff I'm interested in.
Mm, that's fair.
So now I just do stuff I'm interested in.
Well.
But I have a different job than you.
That's fair.
Yeah.
But that makes a lot of sense. Actually, your daughter said this on the episode that I was listening most recently to with her. About schoolwork. She was talking about the things that she was interested in, how like if she was studying, she would like leave the room and she would not remember it even though she spent all this time
right.
studying. But if it was something she was interested in, she would take it with her, right?
Yeah.
Like, it has to do with like thinking yeah. about college and like things. When you start focusing on the things you're interested in, not
yeah.
that you don't need to learn some of those other skills, because you do. It's mm-hmm. so important to be a more well-rounded human being. And yet, the thing that you need to focus most on, which you gives you the most energy and mm-hmm. most excitement, are the things you're interested in.
Right.
Yeah.
And for it's part of why I still play out some, because I really don't like playing out. But
really?
Yeah, you got to stay up. That's night. Fair. But like when you're performing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're present then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, you like, have to be, especially live performing.
That's what I'm saying. So that's part of why I think it's part of the gift of the arts. Mm. Is if you can perform, you can force yourself into unwavering presence.
Mm-hmm. That kind of energy, though, too, the energy it takes to be on, mm-hmm. focused, right, is something else that's like great. And yeah. as long as you're, I think, feeding into whatever it is that you're calling, whatever you want to call it, that energy also feeds you. But I think that if you're giving out that energy, working on that energy, and it's not for something that also feeds you, you're draining, right?
Yes.
You're draining right. from yourself. So it's kind
perfectly
of that
said.
Same.
Yep. And the other thing I like about the arts, mm-hmm. your job, I think I have a theory about why it feels good.
Mm.
I think like when you, for me, it's when I hear music.
Mm-hmm.
It's saying stuff that I don't have words for. Because I think it's hubris to think that we have a word for every mm-hmm. emotion.
Mm-hmm.
We don't. We have, mm-hmm. and every emotion is a spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So there needs to be a word for 99% pissed off, a different word for 98% pissed off,
yep.
right? But
I'll
we just
that.
Say pissed off,
yep.
right?
Yeah.
But, and I think theater does this too. It lets you, if you're performing,
mm-hmm.
you get to say things that you can't really say
yep.
because there's not words for
you
them.
You get to work through
but
things.
But I get to write,
yep.
right? But I can communicate it,
yep.
even though I don't have words for it. And
yep.
if you're listening, you're being told things
mm-hmm.
that you didn't have words for that
mm-hmm.
you can't think. Because somebody told me in college, like, you can't think unless you have a word for it. But you,
huh.
right? Like,
okay.
you can't have a thought that you don't have a word for. Because you're thinking, you think in words.
Right.
So.
Can't think in pictures? I guess not.
like, can you think in pictures?
I don't know.
Let's try.
Let's think about it.
Listener yeah. gives 5 minutes. We're going to think pictures. But that's – I always thought like the performing arts and for me, not the visual arts, but
mm-hmm.
For like one of my best friends, totally the visual arts.
Mm-hmm.
It lets you say things that you couldn't mm-hmm. say in any other mm-hmm. way.
It's one of the – it's interesting you were saying for you, not the visual arts, and it's the – because so performing arts, that's my background, right?
Right.
And since coming to Artsman Hudson, we have a gallery in our Poughkeepsie space, right, that rotates out with different exhibits. And one of my favorite things is the artist talk that we do the very last day of the exhibit, where the artists get to come and talk about their piece, the creation, how they were feeling, why they did it, like, and have the community ask questions and
right.
other artists ask questions. And I love that so much because I don't necessarily understand visual art. Because it wasn't my background, I don't always understand the techniques and like whatever else. So I love to learn about those things
right.
too, because as I'm looking at, then I appreciate something so much more, right?
Mm-hmm.
But also I like, because it's in our office space that I'm there as much as, you know, you can be. And when I need to take a break from my computer, I go and walk around the space and look at a different piece of art. And I have my lived experience, and I look at something and I see something completely different than the artist who created it for whatever reason.
Right.
And it's so fascinating to just have that opportunity.
Mm.
And so since taking on working at this organization, our house actually has so much – local visual art,
right.
which is so cool. And it's because of the story
cool.
behind the art is
mm.
why we own the pieces. And my husband's so good because he's very much like, I don't get it. He's like, visual art doesn't speak to me. He loves music. He loves theater. He loves, you know, whatever.
Yep.
We were actually at the Loeb at Vassar, right? Before I was writing an article. And so I had already gone and seen it, but I wanted to bring my kids and my husband to see the different artwork, which is cool. Having kids get to be exposed to that really
yeah.
is cool because my kids are so comfortable in a gallery, a little too comfortable, but like I'm like, don't touch the artwork.
Right.
Like, oh, look at it. But it was the first time my husband came up to me. He came out of the one, you know, one of their other rooms, and he was like, I found something that spoke to him. And I'm like, oh my God, where is it? I was like, let me see it. Can we buy it? What does it look like? It was not for sale. But it was interesting. It was a man, and I will never forget. It was a man. It was like a charcoal piece, black and white. A man sitting on like almost like a cot, a bed. There was a window, and it was like almost like just contemplating. And he was like, "I have no idea why, but this speaks to me." And I'm like, "That's so cool! Like, yeah. How great!" Since then, he's found a couple of pieces, which since he's bought, like, and we have them in our house, but. It's interesting because it's great having those visual pieces in our house. Like when I pass them, like I tell my kids the story that the artist told me about those pieces and like the things that I have, you know? I don't even remember how we got there, but again, I think we were talking about communication.
I'm more like your husband was. Like I've never seen a painting that I think it's cool. I think it's a skill set.
Yeah.
It's like masonry. I think it's cool. I appreciate a brick wall.
Yeah.
But I look at like, you know, I look at art and I'm just like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't.
It's funny. We've had I'm the youngest of five. My siblings are all vastly different. And my brother who's closest to me, he is, he works in public schools. He's a middle school teacher now, has worked in high schools. He's coaches sports and all of these things. So whenever he comes to visit me in this space, again, like, there's a gallery in our actual office. I wear heels almost 100% of the time. Hardwood floors, I'm loud. I don't mind being there. Here I am.
Right.
He walks into the space. I'm like, hey, come on in or whatever. And like, I'm loud or whatever. And my brother, who is like 6'2", he's a big dude. You could see him shrink in the space, like wanting to get like quiet and like, talking and he's looking at me. I'm like, what? Like, just talk. You know, and like right. He'll look at the artwork and he'll literally look at something. And he's like, I don't get it.
Right.
And like, and my brother is actually very creative. And it was, you know, I say the public school system that kind of took it out of him. He was an amazing singer. He had like a 3-octave range.
Oh, wow.
He could draw. My dad could draw. We found out later as we went through some of his things. He could draw all of these things. But in school, in public school, you had to pick art or sport.
Right.
You couldn't do both.
Right.
So he went sport.
Right.
The
state of the arts in school makes me crazy.
Yeah.
I honestly, maybe your generation, but I kind of feel like my generation was like the last one that the arts were emphasized enough that, that you even left school thinking, okay, that's an important, legitimate thing to do.
I was like, I don't know if that was in my generation. I think about it because I had very supportive parents.
Right.
Right. So like I remember when I went to undergrad to act, right? And in my first acting 101 class, the very first thing they talked about, or maybe it was in like freshman seminar, they were like, whose parents don't want them to be here right now?
Right.
It was me and one other person in the class who did not raise our hand.
Mm.
And I didn't realize that. Like, I was very lucky. And I was looking around. I was like, your parents don't want you to be here. I mean, we got to pay to be here. You're still here. Like, I was like, it's expensive to be here. Like, that's crazy. But, I was very lucky. I had parents who – my father was a first-generation American. My mother was always loved the arts and whatever else. And my parents were literally like, you just do – whatever will make you happy. So like, if this is what it is, go find a job that does that.
You are lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was so lucky. Yeah. My parents were like, cool, go do that. Like I loved dancing. I loved singing. I had played the piano. I like all these things. My parents were like, well, clearly this is where you should be going. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I played sports because I liked them, but it wasn't like,
right.
You know, that wasn't where I found my people. That wasn't where I felt most comfortable.
Right.
Yeah, so I was very lucky in that fact, like having parents who did that.
That's cool. I'm an abusive parent that way.
Say that differently. Unpack that a little bit differently.
let me tell you the story. You might agree.
Okay.
So my daughter has an amazing singing voice.
Oh.
Like my wife can kind of sing. Mm-hmm. I can sing, but, you know, I do party tricks with my hands on a guitar to make up for what I can't do. But my daughter can sing.
Mm.
Wouldn't join a choir. Mm. Wouldn't sing publicly. Wouldn't get lessons. Wouldn't anything. So unlike your parents, I said, okay, I'm not letting this voice go to waste. So I told you about the Lifted Project.
Mm-hmm.
So there's 10 soloists.
I was like, she had a solo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But here's why it was abusive. Because her first time ever singing in public, it's 37 rock stars and soloists who, you know, and little 15-year-old kid or 16-year-old.
She was a star.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was crazy because, like, she was so nervous that she kept messing it up and messing it up and messing it up. And then one of the singers said, let me – if you're a Burton woman, all you need is somebody to go forehead to forehead with you for 2 minutes. So one of the singers did and brought her back, and then she crushed it. I don't know what they said, but yeah.
But I love that.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It works for them. I don't know if it works for me, but it works for them. You go like this, and they can tell.
Which is interesting. It's actually something that my husband and I do. Like, if, like, we're having a hard moment or whatever else, that's something that we do. Like, we go head-to-head, actually, like, you know, nose-to-nose, and we just sit there and breathe for a minute. And, like,
that's cool.
Yeah.
That's a cool exercise.
Yeah. It's something that I don't know why. I
thought about making the worst joke in the world.
You could make it.
No, it's so... Well, she doesn't listen to the show, so I'll be able to get away with it. So Trish has a big nose. Okay. So I was just thinking, if we went nose to nose, it probably wouldn't work.
We'll go you side to side. My husband and I both have big noses in different ways.
Oh, okay.
And like, you just go side to side.
Right. Oh, okay. That's the plan.
Differently.
All right. Fair enough. Because I'm like, how does that fit?
You can make it work. Nose to nose.
Oh, okay.
Side. Got to fit in like
but a puzzle. That's a cool exercise.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's one of those moments, again, like we talked about water, right? And feeling calm. That's something that if I'm feeling scattered or unhinged or whatever. Mm. Like I.
What a great idea!
That. Yeah.
You ever do couples therapy?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. We did couples therapy when we moved in together. We were just engaged.
Did it work?
Yeah.
See, I'm the problem then.
It helped us. I mean, it helped. We were actually just so the dishes were another person in our relationship when we first moved in together. Because again, you're two people who came from very different backgrounds, right?
Right.
For me, there could not be dishes in the sink at the end of the night. I don't know why. They could be there. Oh, well, of course they could be there. No, they cannot.
No, they cannot.
They cannot be there. It was like this anxiety thing. I think it's because like you start each day and I want it to be fresh and ready and like
right.
I like to walk out and my kitchen not look like a bomb blew up. Like I just would like that. For him, it didn't matter. It would get done. Why did it? You know, whatever.
Right.
And I was doing most of the cooking. And so, like, again, we always tried to do some sort of partnership. If I'm cooking, he's cleaning, or we at least help with all the things.
That's so healthy.
And
now I'm glad Trish doesn't listen to the show because want her to get any ideas about, like, partnering.
But it was funny. So, like, when we were also children. He was 19. 19 and we were engaged and we had an apartment and
good for you scoring a 19-year-old.
Yeah,
well done.
Thanks. You know, it's not strange at all. I was 21, so it wasn't too terrible. But the dishes, like I don't want to say like rage out, but the anxiety it would cause me, and again, not being able to communicate, it was not a good communicator, and saying how it was making me feel, why it was making me feel that way. So we went the same therapist who told me, like, why are you that important?
Right.
Like, same woman. And it was great. She really helped us. And there was something very funny because we were theater people. Our therapist told us, like, it was an interesting exercise even for her because theater people have a different comfortability with each other, right? With people in general, being physically comfortable. So, like, one of the exercises I will never forget, she did too. She had a hula hoop, and she put it in the room, and he and I had to stand in it and be like this with each other. And we were just standing there, and she was like watching us and waiting for us to get uncomfortable standing there. We were standing there for a long, long time, and she was like, this is so fascinating. And then we were like, why? And she's like, well, most times when I put couples in there, there's a point where you can see like someone gets uncomfortable.
Right.
Just because, I guess, of normal, quote unquote, human space. Like you need human space. Theater people.
Nothing normal.
There's nothing normal.
Right.
When I meet people, it's really like I'm a hugger. So it's like, but like, no, in normal life, you shake hands or you fist bump, elbow, whatever the thing is at the moment. But it's interesting because that was something, again, like theater arts has taught me so much and also removed boundaries that exist. Maybe they should, but they don't. But like, there's all of these different things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So we have gone to couples therapy a few times.
So Trish and I go to couples therapy. Yeah. Right. And so,
is it helpful?
Well, we did.
Oh,
we,
okay.
It didn't work.
Okay.
So we go, and
Well, you're still together, so I mean.
Well, not because of the therapy.
Okay.
So we go. And the therapist said, give us an exercise. When you come back, I want you to write down the things that you think you're responsible for, the you know, what problems you think you're responsible for in a relationship.
Ooh.
So a week goes by. I go in. I've got like a legal pad because I'm just post-crazy.
Yeah.
And so I got a legal pad, and I'm going, this is what I did, this is what I did, this is what I did. The list of what I didn't do is shorter, but this is what I did, this is what I did. She goes, okay, that was a long list. I'm like, yeah, well. And then she goes to Trish, she goes, and what's your list? She goes, I didn't do anything wrong. And I'm like, oh, that's an interesting power dynamic, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm like, okay. So the therapist says, okay, we've got some work to do.
Mm-hmm.
So she says, I want you, for next time when you come, I want you to make something and give it to the other person. But you have to make it, right?
Oh, my gosh. This is exciting.
I'm a songwriter.
Okay.
What am I going to do?
Yeah.
And I know how to work a chick and a guitar. So, except for my wife. But so I wrote her a song.
Mm-hmm.
And I played the song. And the therapist is like... And Trish is like, I've heard all his bullshit songs so many fucking times.
I was thinking there's your wife rolling her eyes.
Yeah. And we leave, and she's like, she likes you. We're not coming back here. And I'm like, okay, fair. So, yeah, so it didn't work.
What did she make for you?
I don't remember.
Interesting.
Could have been nothing.
Could have been nothing because she came in and she's like, I didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
See, like, that's... That was, I mean, one of the times that, you know, we had gone and were, you know, working on things, that was something that was also eye-opening to me and also very similar to your wife. Not that I didn't think I did anything wrong, but I took less ownership of...
Right.
Like, most things were on him, which is not fair.
Like,
at all, because 100%, there's two people in the relationship. There's two things that are happening. Which has helped us, you know, now in future, like, things are happening. I might not like it, or there might be something that I disagree with, but it's like, what part am I playing in this?
Right.
You know, if it's just not communicating to me, like, I don't like when you do this. Well, if he doesn't know that, how is he supposed to not do it?
Right.
Like, you know what I mean?
Right. Well, cancer did that for us.
Mm.
Because, like, Trish is a really proud person.
Mm-hmm.
Won't ask for help, won't anything.
I relate.
refuses to ask for help.
If
she was homeless, she wouldn't borrow money. She's just very, very proud person and carries herself like that and blah, blah. For a year and a half, she got humbled. Mm-hmm. And I mean really humbled. Mm-hmm. I had to wash her humbled.
Yeah.
But it was great because she came out of it. She came out of it like thinking, okay, you know, I do own some of the problems because this guy is actually doing good stuff, and I'm the problem right now. Like, I own all the problem, and it was great because it was indisputable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your cancer was the problem for 2 years, and you know we turned it into something good, but so that was her, the first time where she kind of thought, oh wait, maybe.
Yeah.
I am the problem.
Well, and that's, you know, we actually joke around about that with my youngest daughter, who's one, because, like, when I'm in the room, she's has to be with me, is attached to me, like, whatever. And we always joke around. I'm like, I know, I am the problem. I am here. I am the problem.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Oh, I totally. By the way, 17, that happens again.
Oh,
you
good.
Walk in the room and, no, it's me.
It's me.
It's me.
I'm the problem.
You've been driving for 10 minutes. You're way better driver than me. It's me. I get it. I understand.
I am the problem. Yeah.
And then the other thing, too, with couples therapy, unless you're theater people, I think theater people also know how to work dialogue. And so you're better communicator because you have options. when I give you a sentence, I hate being on home from here, is your sentence. You can think of four different ways to say that, right?
Right, like Christopher Walken, start inflecting differently.
There you go, yeah. Regular people,
yeah,
we don't have that. We only have the one way. So I think for theater people in therapy, that's a real advantage.
As long as you've done the work, right? Because that's the thing. Like, I think about going to undergrad and who I was walking in.
Right.
And my school did a lot. They were just phenomenal because they broke you. I don't want to say they broke you down in a terrible way, but like they deconstructed the norms. Right.
Right.
And you did it in this safe space.
That's cancer.
Yeah, yeah. You are literally broken down.
Yep.
And then you are given skills to build up.
Right.
And actually, so again, so my mother, who went to school for social work, right? And I was going to school for acting. And when I would come home from thing and talk to her a lot about the work I was doing, she was like, "That's so fascinating. I learned those same things in social work." And she was saying, I learned them so I could help people, right?
Right.
You learned it so you could recreate people in situations.
Oh, well said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's pretty weird.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
But that is a lot of, like you were saying, like you learn like when you see a sentence structure, right? You're given a script, you break down like, okay, here's what you're saying, but what is that person feeling? What is that underlying, you know, what is in between the lines, right? What is being said? What is the actions? What is the, you know?
And then, so my point would be that theater people, I think, are more honest in therapy because you can get there faster. And whereas regular people haven't done the work. Theater people understand what a person is.
Yeah.
Regular people are people, but they don't do a lot of analysis of what a person is.
Right, right.
So you have a big head start.
Yeah.
So couples therapy is hard for that reason. And two, time stamp this.
I was saying
something stupid. No, it's hour 44. Okay. I may need to cut this. Sex is such an important part of a relationship. And it will take you, I don't care who the therapist is, it will take you a month and a half to be able to talk freely about sex.
Really?
So, you're a theater person. Yeah. It won't take you a month and a half.
Yeah.
But a regular person.
Yeah.
But then the other problem is, well, you're both theater people because you can't really trust a theater person during sex.
Why? Because you think you can perform? I mean, with the person.
I don't know.
I mean, but with whoever you're, I mean, hopefully whoever you're with, if they're your person, you don't have to, right? Because you have that conversation.
How long are you guys together?
Since 2007.
So that's 17, that's 10, 20 years, 21 years.
No.
Yeah.
No, am I that old?
2007 to 17 is 10. No, sorry. 2007 to 17 is 10.
Yeah.
7 more to 24 is 17. 17 years.
I was like, whew.
Yeah.
All
right. Year 18. Check back in with me.
Okay. Year 18, I'll check
everybody,
back in.
Everybody has an off night.
Yeah.
But
yeah, because I think, but you're not wrong. I'll say very lucky parents and my relationship with my mother. My mother also taught sex ed. So as a young child, pretty perfect. Yeah. Well, this is very funny. I remember having the talk with my mother, right? And having the talk was we were sitting playing Wario Woods on the video game. I don't remember what system Wario Woods was on. And she was talking to me about it. And I was like, why would anybody want to do that? And she was like, when you get older, you'll understand why. But like this, and I was like, okay, but everything was so open, which again is like why I'm so open with my kids, like about, and they want to talk about anything, even like when I was pregnant. Well, how's that baby getting out of there? Well, there are two options,
right?
And I was like,
we're rooting for one, but
I was like, and here we are, but like at the same time, you give them, and my mother was very good at this too, like you give them the information that they ask for and just leave it there, and if they're curious and have more questions,
right,
they'll continue to ask, right?
Right.
But being as open as humanly possible, and I think that that's served me well wherever I've gone, is to do that. But it took learning to be comfortable. Very, like I was saying, to be comfortable in my own skin, to be like, you know, again, we were talking about how my husband is very good at change. He's very good at, you know, just shifting on a dime and whatever else. And I'm like not. Even with... example, my daughter, okay, had two girls' names had them for the longest. I had it from my first son because it's boy, boy, girl.
Right.
I was like, these are the two names. These are the two names. These are the two names. She comes out. I literally say a different name. I'm like, what do you think about this? My husband loves it. And then I panic. And I'm like, no, we had two names. Like, we had two names. It's got to be one of those two names. And her name is not one of those two names. It's the name that randomly came out. And that was probably the first.
Good for you.
Yeah, right? It was the first moment that I was like, oh, I'll take the change. I mean, it did take, we didn't have her named for like, until we were about to like leave the hospital. Like, we sat up there debating the names. My husband was like, I can't believe, like, you're the one who said this. And I'm like, but I can't, I don't know.
So my daughter's born, mm-hmm. and it was a rough delivery. So Trish is knocked out. Mm-hmm. Nurse comes in. She says, Dad, what are we naming mm-hmm. your daughter? So I'm like, well, I said, because I'm foster kid, right? And then adopted. Okay. So she's not the case anymore, but when she was born, she was the only living blood relative mm-hmm. that I had. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, I was a foster kid, I've been adopted, that's my only living blood relative, and I used to drink a lot, so I'm thinking Donor would be a good first name.
Donor.
The nurse didn't think it was funny at all. I was making a joke. I'm like, but she no went over like, yeah. So I'm like, all right, let's just go with Gramercy then.
Did she just like panic?
Yeah. So then you talk about the talk. Mm-hmm. So I'm the communicator in the family. Mm-hmm. So I had to have the talk with my daughter. But Trish was so funny because she like helicoptered around. And it's so funny, like people that don't communicate, like when they see communication.
But she's a third grade teacher.
I'm telling you, in that environment, she's a third grade teacher savant. In that environment, she, flawless.
Interesting.
And with friends, flawless.
Yeah.
But in like a family situation, like, She helicopters, and she's just now learning to like take control of
I was going
to
say, when she helicoptered, did she like chime in?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, you handle this, but if you're not saying the thing I want to say, I'm going to jump into the conversation and say it. That's great.
Yeah. And I remember doing that with her and thinking, I'm a dumb guy. You're a girl. I'm going to mar one of the most beautiful things in life for you right now. I see him doing it. I know I'm going to do it. And I think
and it'll, that's interesting. I think, again, it's like just as transparent and vulnerable that in and honest that you can be, like, mm-hmm. that's something that, again, like I said, my husband and I are trying very hard to do with our kids, because I think, again, with all of the things that you do in life, I think if the more open you can be, and also like, so like I've this past year since my mom, I cry a lot, and allowing my kids to see that, right? And like, also though, we have this conversation with my kids, because like, they see me cry, but that's also like the way I express, I'll say, all emotions is through crying. Like, if I'm angry,
me too,
I cry.
Yep.
If I'm sad, I cry. If I'm really happy, I cry. So like, literally, my kids though, now they see me cry and they just stare, and they're trying to navigate, which one of the emotions am I having?
Right.
But I also think, though, it's important for them to see me cry, to see you sad, to see you have different emotions, because I don't think that happens all the time. And again, like—
No, it doesn't.
Like, what— It's okay. It's okay to be sad.
Right.
It's okay to be mad. It's okay to be frustrated. Like, you know, our whole thing is like, how you can't treat other people poorly because you're feeling these things. Right? Like, you have to like navigate yourself and feel all the feelings, because they exist. But like, you can't treat other people terribly because you have whatever emotion you're having, happy, sad, mad, whatever it is.
Right. Crying thing's hard, man. Yeah. I'm the same way.
Are you?
And so, Lifted project, like, I write the music for it, right? So I write the song, but music makes me cry. So I have to play a song I'm going to perform 300 times until I stop crying about it.
Make yourself like
just think about the song and blah, 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 blah. And then I forgot to finish the Facts of Life story. So I tell Gramercy, all right, this is how it happens. Yeah. Man does his thing, woman does her thing.
Yeah.
And she's like, that's how I got here? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, you too? And I'm like, yeah. And she goes, yuck.
That's so funny. Yeah. It's also, I think, my husband and I had this conversation. Like, do you remember, like, your parents being humans, people, a man and a woman, like
they weren't.
Whatever, like, or whatever you have as parents, like right. man, woman, woman, whatever it is. But like, no, they're not. They're mom and dad. They're like, right. they're, I don't want to say robots, but they're like, you know, they're these creatures. They're not humans. They're, you know, yeah. whatever. And
that's so funny. I had Gramercy in the, did I interrupt you?
No, I was just going to say, no, until you get to see, like, see your parents as people, there's that moment where you see them
yeah.
as humans, which is, I think, so important.
I had Gramercy and her friends in here, right?
You said that. I can't wait to listen.
And we leave, and her friends are like, your dad's cool. Like, because it's a fun job.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And they get to be on a show. Yeah, yeah. And I remember I could see her looking at them like, what are you? And then it dawned on her like, oh, wait. That guy's actually my dad too. Like, but as like, oh wait, there's a person in there. Like, I saw her.
Yep.
I saw her get it.
Yeah. You have a job. You do things. And yeah. that's interesting too, because it's like, again, with my kids, we talk about why we do the jobs that we do.
Right.
Right. Why right. like, it's interesting because there's the TAs in the school, right?
Right.
And so I guess there was an opening for a TA in my boy's school, and my oldest was like, Mommy, like, why don't you come do this job? And I had been on maternity leave, so I hadn't gone back to work, right?
Right.
Like, why don't you do this job? I'm like, guys, I have a job. Like, I have a job. I have a job. I have a job that I like. Right now I'm on, like, a little hiatus
because
we had our daughter. And he just couldn't understand it because he was like, yeah, but why not just do this job? I'm like, well, I mean, I love you, but, like, I don't want to do that job.
Right.
It's like, and I love the people who do that job for you. They're amazing. Like, they've got such great people, like right. your wife in that school. They were meant to do that. That's why they're there. I'm not meant to do that.
Right. I'm right.
Like, I love you guys a lot.
Was that because he knows what it is, though?
What do you mean?
He knows what a teaching assistant is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He doesn't know what an executive director is necessarily.
No, but his version is very funny. He's like, you're the boss, right?
Right, there it is, yep.
But and I'm like, well, kind of. I said, but I have a board of directors.
Right.
So, like, I am in charge of a certain amount of people and a certain amount mm-hmm. of things. I said, but I also have people that I report to.
Right.
Right? There are people, because of the line of, you know, my work, there's right. people. And so it was interesting, too, because, like, when I have board meetings and stuff like that, I'm like, okay, like, this is what I'm doing right now, because a lot of them are remote, and so I'll be doing them in the downstairs. The kids are upstairs. And that's actually kind of a beautiful thing I always think has come from the pandemic, is like, my kids just jump in the meeting. And it's not like I don't have this terrible, like, right. I'm so sorry my kids are there. No, they jump in. They're like, hey, like, what's up? Like, you know, my kid has to go to the bathroom. He's like, can someone help me? And I'm like, I'm like giving my report, and I'm like, hi, I'll be right back.
Right.
It's like, did you hear that? And they're all laughing. I'm like, I'll be right back. Thank you so much.
That's cool, though.
Yeah, but they know what a teaching assistant is. He understands that, like, I'm a boss, quote unquote, right. which he thinks is exciting. But, like, we also get to have that dialogue, too. Like, he's like, do you like being a boss? I'm like, well, sometimes.
Right.
I said, sometimes I do. I like to help people. I like to help see opportunities for people. I like to connect people. These are the things that I like to do. Like you said, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's really hard. There's a lot of fires being thrown at you, and it's your responsibility to fix all of them.
Everything,
or it's like, you know, or there's just a lot of communication that has to happen. And there's only so many hours in the day. And I also want to be a good partner, spouse, parent. So, like, how do you compartmentalize that? So, yeah, do I like it? Absolutely. Is it hard? Sure.
Right.
You know, but so is... We were just talking about this for him. So is being an older brother, being the oldest brother. Mm. It's hard. And he was like, he always asked me, did you like being the youngest? Because I was the youngest.
Right.
I was like, sometimes, but sometimes it was hard because I was the youngest and the older ones got to do stuff I didn't get to do. Yeah. And like, that was hard too.
Yeah.
You know?
That's cool. My family sees me work too. The other day, I'm on a stool,
mm-hmm.
playing guitar, practicing, writing a song that's, like, if I sing on the show, it gets heard, right? So I'm like, okay, there's like ears on it. It's one of the cool things about a show like this is like, I don't have to build a song and build an audience for my music,
because
people like you got to go out and play out around here.
Sure.
It's really hard to build an audience.
Yep.
Nobody goes to see you. I don't care who you are. They go to have whatever the burger is, and you happen to be there. But so the music's part of the show, so I take it like really seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Also, everybody around here is so freaking talented that if I suck, it's going to look.
They're gonna know.
Yeah, you can. Well, everybody will. Yeah. You can hear the difference between.
Yeah.
So I'm like, taking it really seriously, and I'm like, I hear in the hallway, and I'm like, she's not gonna, And here, getting close. I'm like, she's not gonna. I'm literally playing, and Trish is vacuuming under my feet.
Oh, are you busy? Yeah. I had to vacuum this spot this moment.
You're playing the guitar. Yeah. I'm working.
Yes.
The vacuum. You.
No, I'm laughing so hard too, though, because I can. I so relate to your wife. I could literally see myself doing that to my husband and be like, "Do you have to do that right now?"
Right.
I mean, I'm doing it right now. So,
are,
like,
are you gonna vacuum? No.
I can totally see myself.
Yeah.
Doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's ugly.
That's real though. All right, where are we on time?
Yeah, I got to get you out of here. Yeah?
I do. Yeah.
Okay, great. You're amazing. Oh,
well, thank
so,
you. thank you.
Arts of Mid-Hudson.
Yes.
You're the executive director.
Mm-hmm.
Where can we learn about it?
Artsmidhudson.org.
Okay.
All the social medias, so Facebook, Instagram, X, YouTube, LinkedIn, all the places.
And we can donate?
Yes.
On the site.
Yep. And that's okay. Like, and I do have to say, that's something that's really, really important, something that we're working on this year specifically, is that we really noticed that people don't, and I mean the community doesn't realize how important the arts are at this level. And why I say that is that we're an arts council, right? We're an arts service organization. We serve Dutchess, Ulster, and Orange County. Orange County has its own arts council, but we serve this region. The support that we do and the money that we get donated to us goes back into the community. It goes to paying musicians to do a gig. It goes to having a gallery exhibit. It goes to having youth programming in the community that's free. It goes to, you know, I think it's 89 cents of the dollar goes back into the community.
That's great.
Yeah. And people don't...
You're not United Way. Well done.
There's it's so important. And when we do fundraising, it's often hard for people to see that tangible difference, right? Because like when you think of, and there are so many phenomenal nonprofits, but when you see, like, I'll say something like the SPCA, and this is not the actual thing, but it's like, if you donate $10, you feed a dog for a week. We don't have that, right?
Mm.
We don't have that, like, if you give us $10, we're going to feed an artist for a week. That's not the, like, come on. Like, that's not how it is.
Right.
But you're feeding your soul. You're feeding your community. You're making it vibrant. And artists, professional artists, need that. They need funding. We give out grants. We do these things. We give professional development. We have workshops. We have all of these things. And we have to raise funds to do that. And people don't necessarily see how important that is. And so, like, when people see, oh, well, we give out grants. Well, we don't have, like, you know, some private donor who's funding.
Right.
Like, we raise it from our community.
Right.
You know, to make our community beautiful and to make it this place. So, yes, you can donate, the short, long version.
I would phrase it like this.
Phrase it.
I would ask, do you like that carrot? Yeah. Do you know how the carrot got there? No. But you like the carrot, right? You don't know how it got there. Do you know what a farmer is? Yeah. Do you know, do farmers get paid? Yeah. That's how the carrot got there. Do you like music?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how it got there?
Mm-hmm.
A musician made it, and they have to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
And because you, and that, and the, you have, I work with this organization, James's Warriors. They prevent teen suicide,
mm-hmm.
and they do presentations in schools, right? Mm-hmm. But they have the same problem you do. Like, they don't know, you don't get to see a saved life.
Mm-hmm.
You probably will never know about it.
No, they're walking down the street.
Right. You probably don't know about it. So you can't point mm-hmm. to the number of states of elevated consciousness that mm-hmm. you create mm-hmm. by funding an artist.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no metric mm-hmm. for it.
Or lives saved. I mean, think about the arts and, like, what they've done. I mean, they literally,
they literally
save lives every day.
Right.
And yet, you can't see
it. You can't point to it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to think about that message.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. You're awesome, by the way.
Thank you.
Will you come back?
Of course.
All right, cool.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
No, you're fun.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
it's because it's the theater person thing.
Right.
I'll talk about anything.
I don't know if you really liked it here, because I don't know.
I'm not that good of an actor. But yeah, no, it is fun. It's fun to be able to have an open conversation.
Yeah. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah.
And we need to thank Merritt, right?
Oh, always.
Yeah.
Always thank Merritt.
Yeah. She's awesome.
She's the best.
I knew, like, a little bit of her story from a Facebook post.
Oh.
So I had her come on the show and tell her story. And I'm like, wait, what the fuck? What? Her story is incredible.
Yeah. It's fun. So, you know, she worked at Artsman Hudson, right?
No.
That's how she and I met.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So we have the same birthday.
Oh, do you?
Yep. So she was working in Artsman Hudson in our grants department when I was working in the marketing department.
Oh, okay.
And so, and she also has a theater background.
Yep.
So we like jived on that. Then we found out our birthdays were the same. We're like, we are people. Like, yeah. These are our people. Yeah.
I throw myself in front of a train for marriage. Yeah. Awesome, man. All right. I got to get you out of here. You got to go raise money.
I do. Yes.
Say the website one more time.
Artsmidhudson.org.
And I'll put that up front too. So in case people couldn't get through the hour and 59 minutes that we did, I'll put it up.
I talked about everything right under the sun.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, please, my pleasure. Bye, guys.
Thank you.
Yes, of course.
All right, fine. Make sure you get back. Yes, please.